Comic Book Club News gives you the comic book news you need to know first thing in the morning every weekday in the form of digestible 3 to 5 minute long podcasts. Comic Book Club News recaps breaking news stories from Marvel, DC Comics, and beyond, Monday through Friday. New episodes drop 6 a.m. ET in the Comic Book Club News feed, so they're ready for you when you're ready for the day. Comic Book Club News. You hear it second or third, possibly fourth. It's another beautiful morning in New Orleans, and we are hitting the streets, grabbing ourselves a drink. Not too much of a drink, but we're drinking a lot, probably too much, here on Cloak and Jabber, the Cloak and Dagger podcast. Hey, everybody, I'm Alex.
And I am JT Sizzle on the side, and we are playing cards, but not with just the cards with names on them, because that's fucked up. Hey, let's get some coffee. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And as mentioned, you're listening to Cloak and Jabber, a Cloak and Dagger podcast. We're going to be talking about the third episode of season 2, Shadow Selves. And oh boy, I'm glad I called out that drinking right at the top, because alcoholism is not actually funny, and I apologize to everybody.
Wow. Really turned around there. Yes, I mean, we'll talk about this later, but this show really depicts everything in all its horrifying detail.
Yeah, something we were talking about with the first two episodes in particular is this is a drama with superpowers, not a superhero show. Sometimes it feels almost so real and so intimate, it's like you're intruding on people's lives in a certain way. And particularly with the Father Delgado stuff, which we'll get into in a second, this episode, it's very sad and played very real and to the show's benefit. Okay, before we get into episode 3 proper, though, we're going to go to my favorite part of the show, which is where we check in with our New Orleans correspondent, Brett Macris. He sent us a bunch of notes for the past 2 episodes, which, hang in there, this is a lot of stuff, but because there was a double-sized premiere, he talked us through real stuff about New Orleans from episode 1 and episode 2. So we'll kick it off with season 2, episode 1. Brett says, here we go. Okay, the bridge that Ty is standing above in the opening scene is the 10 freeway, which rolls right over Carrollton Avenue. It's not a fun place to be. It goes through most neighborhoods in NOLA and all the bad ones. There's a lot of homeless camps, and on the weekend, it's a massive party. Almost every weekend, a lot of locals bring out large trailers with food carts and huge grills. There's usually a DJ set up somewhere, and they take over about 2 blocks worth of underpass and go most of the night. It's always chaotic. You can also see the Carrollton Bridge in the background when Ty and Mayhem are in a police car outside the police station. And from that point, it splits into the 90 and the 610. This will take you to Baton Rouge. This is great because I'm planning on driving in New Orleans very soon. When Tandy jokes, waiting for tips sucks. This is why I'm a chef. We should mention Brett is actually a professional chef. After the group therapy session, and then that's why I got into roller derby. She's kidding, but roller derby has a popular following down here because of course it does. I'll tell you what, this is a separate note, not about the roller derby. I'll tell you what, we have great trees in NOLA, especially in the lower garden district where Ty's parents live. They're hundreds of years old. Some of them and Ty probably shouldn't be climbing around to them. While Tandy is cutting up the D-bag abuser's house, Ty is working on a map. The final square he's drawing around are the neighborhoods, I'm going to get this wrong, the Marigny and the Bywater. Brett says he lives in the Marigny, and he's got an arrow going right through his house. Sorry about that, Brett. The big drug warehouse is operating out of the warehouse district, which we should all know by now is real close to Emeralds. Emerald, we're still waiting for you to show up on the show. The underground club under Frenchman, Mayhem mentions when on the phone after Ty dropped off the drugs and money, is the same street God has a sex dungeon in Preacher. It's surprising that they didn't bump into each other. Hashtag Pete the Poodle. I couldn't tell you what club was at the end, but that was bananas. I mean, who in NOLA doesn't drink? Come on, Ty. That's all right. He's a teenager. He's allowed to not drink. Going to the episode two notes, again, season two, episode two. Just a quick reminder that Emoji Girl's mom lives above her voodoo shop in the French Quarter. It's highly unlikely any apartment above voodoo shop looks that nice. Ty and Emoji Girl walk down Burgundy Street, which is the north end of the French Quarter, and a generally quieter street than most of the French Quarter. If you follow it long enough, you'll hit my house. Not my house, but Brett's house. I mention it because I know Alex, okay, here we go, pronounced it like anyone would normally pronounce Burgundy, but down here we put the emphasis on different syllables. I'm reading this live, so in Nola, it's pronounced Burgundy with an emphasis on the gun. So Burgundy. I live on Kerlerac Street. I know Alex just said Kerlerac. We actually pronounce it Kalerac. Oh, wow. This is getting in my head here, Brett. I don't know why no one pronounces the R, but that's just how it is. Siri has issues in New Orleans. Ah, I think Tandy's dance studio is above Decatur Street. Definitely mangled that one. Sorry, Brett. I don't know if there's an actual dance studio, but Decatur Street is a busy end of the French Quarter. Tandy mentions to the outreach guy that the girl that disappears worked at Café Du Monde, the opposite end of Decatur, where the dance studio would be. Café Du Monde is where they sell world-famous beignets and chicory coffee, open 24 hours a day. The club Rue Gru, where the drug gang leaders get murdered, is completely fictional. Also, everyone knows you don't puke in a puddle. A NOLA cop should definitely know better. That's disgusting. It's highly likely that someone else already puked, or God knows what, there, and now you have swamp puke water splashing back on you. Horrendous. So the fight scene with Mayhem and Dagger, this is at the end of the episode, with the ambulance driver, takes place outside a bar called Landing Lounge, which is on the West Bank in Harvey. It's like what New Jersey is to NYC. That's pretty accurate, actually. The West Bank is definitely the New Jersey of NOLA. You could live there, but why would you? Sorry to Aaron and John on our Patreon Slack. He also says, fuck, this show is good. It feels really good to be writing about it again. Till next week. And then adds several quick more notes. He says, he almost forgot, yes, we have cameras in NOLA. Also, electricity, indoor plumbing. And we just got this new thing called the internet. I think I'm spelling it right. But really, Pete makes a good point. That's the first time on this podcast, so congratulations, Pete. There's cameras fucking everywhere in the city. There's a lot of crime and quite a bit of stupid drunk people, so cameras come in handy. Almost everyone has one on their front porch. So chances are somebody would have seen Ty changed. Okay, that out of the way, let's get into the recap proper for episode leading into episode three.
Yeah.
There are two kids, Tandy and Ty. They are, or were, the divine pairing. They had have powers. Ty has the power to teleport himself as well as enter people's fears. And Tandy has a couple of powers now. She can create light daggers, also Dragon Ball Z out.
Hell yeah.
And shoot a big ball of energy, a big ball of light. And she is able to enter people's hopes. Their powers are tied together, but their situations were switched at the end of the last season. So Ty has been on the run from the cops. He was framed for a murder he didn't commit, specifically the murder of Detective Bridget O'Reilly's boyfriend, a cop himself. He definitely didn't do it. Meanwhile, Tandy cleared her father's name and got back to a relatively normal life with her mom. As we picked up in season two, they were still trying to repair their lives, trying to figure out whether they were heroes or not, and ended up both separately on the trail of some human traffickers who work out of the back of ambulances. Basically, they kidnap women from underserved neighborhoods, from impoverished neighborhoods. They inject them with heroin, are doing something with them. Maybe they're selling them as sex slaves. Maybe they're just using them as drug mules. We're not 100% sure exactly how it's all working yet. But they did manage to track down one of the guys with the help of Detective Bridget O'Reilly, at least they thought. Turns out it wasn't Bridget O'Reilly at all. Bridget died at the end of the last season and came back reborn as a new vigilante called Mayhem, who has super sharp nails and uses them to cut people's throats.
Yeah.
It was revealed at the end of the last episode that Bridget and Mayhem are actually two separate people.
Yes.
We thought there was a whole Jekyll and Hyde thing going on, but there was a twist going on there where there are two of them. And what this episode does is it loops back to that moment when Bridget came out of the swamp, when she crawled out of the swamp with green eyes, and works in a couple of other things as we slowly work our way back to the present and fill in some of the gaps there. Last character we should mention, we mentioned Father Delgado. He was a teacher and priest at the school that Ty used to go to. He was an alcoholic, but ran into some hard times, and as we find out towards the beginning of this episode, has left the school, somewhat of his own will, somewhat not. But let's get into it. Let's talk about this episode. There's a lot of...
Also, we should mention the lady used to work at Roxxon.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Mina, played by Ally Mackey. This is a friend that Tandy made in the previous season. Yeah. She was instrumental in studying the Roxxon energy that gave Tandy and Ty their powers. That was something her father had worked on with Tandy's father. And we haven't seen her since the end of last season. So we actually pick up with her. She's still experimenting with the energy, specifically on mice. And she finds, due to a power surge, the mice split in two, and she watches as one of the mouse eats the other mouse, which is basically exactly what's going on with Mayhem and Bridget O'Reilly.
And right, with that, exactly. That's an excessive amount of blood in that situation, don't you think?
Really? I don't know. Mice are like furry little blood bags.
Oh, that's so gross.
Why do you know that?
Yeah.
I used to work with mice.
Oh, wow. What a weird thing to say without giving any more details.
Just professionally. It's not really a big deal.
You
I don't want to get into it.
You worked at a
much.
Blog with mice?
I worked at Disney.
Oh, so they would like put your clothes on and stuff?
I know. I just, someone who lives
like
in
Cinderella?
New York City.
Yeah. Birds, I feel like mice, someone whatever.
Who lives in New York City, I wish they would stop using cute, adorable mice for these things and use rats. You know what I mean? Or something
really.
Else that's like, I feel like.
Rats are cute too.
Nah.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
They're like teenage mice. They're like mice who went through puberty, Pete.
Yeah. Why haven't you ever been in a subway and a rat looks at you and he's like, whatever, leave me alone, Pete.
Yeah. No.
I'm my own animal, Pete.
I'll do whatever I want.
Let me be myself.
Fine. I'm sorry that you guys are like close personal friends with the pizza rat or something. I didn't mean to hit a nerve here, but like, you know, the mouse testing, there's got to be a better way.
I knew Pizza Rat when he was just Rat. Okay, so like
I actually knew him when he was a mouse before he was a teenager. He was pretty cool, and we used to hang out all the time.
Yeah, he really grew out of that phase. Got into pizza. That's a gateway drug to regular garbage.
So anyway, she finds out about that, and then we flash through. How should we arrange this? It's a little difficult to follow some of the history here. It was interesting to me that they included date markers in this episode, because they played around with time a lot on the show, but they've kind of let you follow along. This one, though, even with the date markers, was kind of confusing to follow at certain points.
Yeah,
I felt.
It took me a while to figure out where we were and stuff like that. But I think by the end of the episode, they cleaned it up nicely.
Well, I do think they were just trying to be like, look, they're in this cycle where we're learning about the backstory of the Mayhem character at the same time that our main characters are sort of solving the mystery of the backstory of the Mayhem character.
Right. So we can follow it along, though. She comes out of the swamp, heads back to her apartment, is very upset and alarmed.
Very thirsty. And she's
very thirsty. Gets angry,
she hates her fridge.
Throws it down the stairs. Which I think that was a pretty easy way of establishing that, yes, in fact, she does have super strength beyond anything else. Like, we kind of knew that, but...
Also, it kind of talks shows that she's a little bit more evil version, and also, like, the fact that she still feels the things that the detective felt, and so, like, because her boyfriend died in that fridge, that's still painful for her as well.
Yeah.
The other thing that was very funny to me that happens is they're doing a news report on how the city of New Orleans had been attacked by pseudo zombies the last season. And they say there's destruction everywhere. Everything is terrible. Also, Detective Bridget O'Reilly is in the hospital,
yeah,
which is a very specific detail to throw in a news report.
Yeah, she's a celebrity.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people love her.
Yeah. So Mayhem heads over to the hospital, sees Bridget O'Reilly there, and is about to kill her, just like the mice.
Snuff.
Yeah, old pillow stuff. Is about to kill her with that, just like the mice did in the first scene when
or
she's
have a
interrupted.
Pillow fight. Or have a pillow fight.
Oh, is that what you think?
Yeah. Gaffon.
She's going to have a pillow fight.
Gaffon, yeah. Like, we're twins.
If you discovered your twin, what would you do? What's
the
first thing?
Oh, I'd immediately murder it.
Without asking any questions?
Not one question.
You'd be like, hey, what's your deal? Why wouldn't you be friends? You could be friends with a twin.
Haven't you ever seen Multiplicity? It doesn't work well. You've got to murder that twin as quickly as you can.
The comedy with Michael Keaton?
Yes.
Which one of those clones are you, Pete?
I'm obviously the cool one in the leather jacket.
I was going to say the one that likes pizza.
Yeah, I knew that's what you were going to say.
Yeah, that's what Pete and rats have in common.
Oh, boy.
Love and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes, so Mayhem gets interrupted, jumps back into the vent, and gets out of there, leaves Bridget to wake up on her own, and starts trying to figure out how to live a life and what she is going to do next. And among those things she does is she goes to a secret dingy hotel/apartment place where she gets an apartment there. She tracks down Father Delgado and finds that he's quit and kind of, I would say, helps him along his path to alcoholism a little bit.
Yeah, in a weird
that was
way.
Tough, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is super rough to see. Like he, as we check in with him, falls apart almost immediately. He goes from being a sad priest to on the street, completely drunk, yelling at people scripture as they go by.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, she tracks. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. This was in the past timeline, right?
Yes.
But I want to point out, though, that's Justin, you did that when you were touring in Australia, right? You would just get drunk and sit on a box with your underwear and like heckle people as they walk by.
That seems like an odd statement. Well, what do you mean by that? When I was in Australia.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? What's your game here?
Honestly, Pete, that sounds like the rantings of a crazy person.
Well, you were telling us how that you traveled around and you drank a lot and you would do a lot of street performing.
So, no, what I was talking about, this is totally unrelated, is when I, right after college, I won a grant to study street theater. So I traveled around the world watching people perform theater on the street. I was a theater major.
Okay.
So I was studying
that. Oh, so sorry,
so it's
you
different
were not
from getting drunk and standing on a soapbox and yelling at people.
It's a little different, yeah.
Okay. All right.
But bad. I mean, there's my some bad similarities, I guess.
Do you think is your point that you think Father Delgado got a grant?
I think that's what Pete's insinuating.
Yeah.
Great.
Outside of that personal sidebar, I do think, I think we're meant to see that this whole first sort of third of the episode is setting up that Mayhem is like a loaded gun just trying to shoot somebody. It's a total chaos agent. She pushes Father Delgado deeper into alcoholism. She is just trying to get revenge on anyone and anything that she can.
And one of the first people that she's trying to get revenge on, which we didn't mention in the recap, is Detective O'Connor. Detective O'Connor is the corrupt cop who killed her boyfriend, actually, not Ty, in the last season. And unbeknownst to her, because she was dying across town, Ty basically cloaked him, took him inside of his Dark Force energy. I don't think we've ever called it the Dark Force on the show. We know that from the comics, but took him inside of him, and that's how we got rid of Detective O'Connor the last season. But she's tracking him down. She finds a corrupt councilman or corrupt cop or something like that, that knew Detective O'Connor, ends up slashing his throat and killing him.
Yeah, he's a council member, and it's funny. She almost lets him go, but then kills him because he vouched for Connors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she seems lost at this point until she finds a missing note for one of the missing women and realizes, okay, this is the thing that I need to do. I need to track down these people. And that's kind of how we loop her back to the present storyline.
Exactly.
Now, Pete, how do you feel about her particular brand of justice?
I think it's interesting because we have this, as you say, like chaos kind of person, but also this kind of like mind of a detective where she's trying to do good a little bit, but in awful ways. I think it's a very kind of cool, interesting character. I definitely, before we knew it was two separate people, I really liked her hanging out with like Tandy and going to get justice.
Well, that's one of the big things that they're playing on in this episode as Ty and Tandy and Bridget try to figure out what's wrong. Mayhem is essentially playing on Tandy. And I'm very hesitant to start this, but I was certainly thinking of you, Pete, and curious to see what you thought during the episode, because one of your main problems with season one was how Tandy acted. Yeah. And a lot of what's going on with Tandy in this episode is she is wrestling with the idea of, should I go rogue? Should I not follow the law? Should I do what Mayhem wants me to do and just kill whoever I want whenever I want? While meanwhile, Ty is trying to be the voice of reason and saying, no, we got to do what's right. We got to stick with Bridget. Bridget is our friend. We got to stick by the law. Right. We got to be in the good graces. How'd you feel about that, Pete?
Well, it kind of goes back to the episode before where they're at a meeting and they're kind of talking about their abusive boyfriend, and Tandy loses it and was like, just leave. Get the fuck out of there. You know, and so it's this struggle with what is right and what she wants to do, which I think is kind of a cool, interesting thing to struggle with, especially someone who's trying to be better. In this season, she's trying to be a better person than she was in the first season.
Well, but I think the indicator there is, so she's trying to impose her set of justice on the situation with the girl in the counseling group.
Right.
And then she meets Mayhem, who is putting her sense of justice on all these people and killing them and sort of getting results. It seems like Tandy really wants results.
Yeah, she gets frustrated with the process.
Right, but which involves murdering a lot of people. Ty, on the other hand, Mayhem, it wants to kill evildoers, and Ty's been affected by that very directly because of his brother, and yet he is the one who is saying, no, let's do this the right way. And I think it's a great just split. The setup here is so fun to see how these characters are going to react.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. And you can kind of, what's great is you can see where Ty's coming from and where Tandy is coming from.
Yeah. So the threads that they follow here to try to figure out the Mayhem mystery is, first they ask Bridget, okay, think about what would you do if you were trying to hide out? And so they head over to the hotel. There's a fun little moment where they talk to the hotel proprietor, who was a little rude to Mayhem back in the flashback, who immediately says, I'm sorry, I won't look at you. I won't look at you, miss, and just gives her the keys. So they realize, yep, we're in fact in the right place. And they get to the room and they get to see insane, crazy murder wall that Mayhem has set up to try to track down these missing girls and exactly what's going on with them. And Bridget figures it out. She figures out the key based on playing cards.
Well, it takes her a little bit. And again, like Tandy gets frustrated. She's like, come on, get. And, you know, and Ty's like, hey, give her a moment, man. This is a crazy murder wall.
Yeah. We just got Cloak and Dagger working together, and now they're being broken apart again.
Yeah, I know. It's very frustrating. Man. It's very frustrating.
Well, one thing I wanted to call out is, what did you think of evil Bridget O'Reilly's coffee order of 4 creams and 5 sugars?
That was a lot.
That's insane.
I mean, I guess she has a sweet tooth. That is a pretty evil order of coffee.
Yes. Horrifying.
Really? What? That's interesting. Detail you guys got pulled out of that.
What did you thought it was normal?
I don't drink coffee. I don't know if it's normal or not.
Certainly that seems like a lot, though.
I see people dump sugar and cream into their coffee all the time.
Wait, you don't drink coffee and you also don't understand coffee?
That is correct, yes.
What do you drink? What's something you drink? Just any liquid you drink, Pete?
I have tea, water, soda.
Okay, tea is a perfect one. Would you order tea with four sugars and five creamers?
No, then you're not drinking tea.
What do you drink your tea with, Pete?
I just drink it plain.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, by plain you mean with Mountain Dew, right?
No, I just have the tea, no sugar, no.
But you steep your tea in Mountain Dew. You heat up a kettle of Mountain Dew and drop a tea bag in it, right?
Guys, I don't know why you think if I want to drink Mountain Dew, I'll just drink Mountain Dew, Code Red, of course.
Of course.
Of course. That's like Mountain Dew steeped with some sort of red nightmare tea.
Yeah.
Right. So she orders some coffee. She intimidates this cop who gets her the coffee order and then
I got pulled out of an episode because the way they showed basketball was ridiculous. And then you guys get pulled out of an episode for coffee, but I'm the asshole. That's cool.
I don't. We don't hate the episode. That was just something that I thought was interesting to call out. I don't now hate all of the characters in the same way that you didn't like the basketball playing and refused to talk about the rest of the episode.
Because it was garbage. If you're making a TV show, you got to pay attention to details.
They were paying attention to details.
Yes. You know what? I think I'm going to go with Pete. Pete's right. I thought the coffee order was a little weird, so I'm done. I'm not talking about this anymore.
Alex is out. He's out, baby.
Get passionate, Zelps. Yep. Come on. That's make some it. Choices.
Walking noises. Walk, 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 walk.
Yeah, Alex is gone based on those noises.
All right, great.
Yeah. All right. Back, you guys. I'm back talking about Cloak & Dagger. So we have, they eventually figure out, okay, we got to go talk to Mina. She should understand what's going on. And they head over to her lab. And of course, she breaks it all down. What's happened with her mice? That one is the aggressive one, the other one is not. And that also explains what's been going on with Bridget. She hasn't been able to aim her gun correctly. She's been more meek at work. So she's split not just off a meaner, super strong, super nailed, evil version of herself, but the good version of herself is also weaker. So we had speculated in the previous episode, whether the good Bridget O'Reilly has any sort of powers, I think the answer is no. She's definitely less than Mayhem at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think it is an equal split. So I think obviously she will find the strength in who she is as we're going forward.
I hope so.
Yeah. So they use that information. They track down Mayhem to a strip club and confront her there.
The glitter gutter.
Yep. A very well lit sequence, I would say.
Okay. That's the creepiest way to say it, I guess. Hey, well, I don't know. Strip club. Pretty well lit. Am I right?
Well, here's the thing. They're a freeform Marvel show. It's weird to me that they set it at a strip club to begin with, because they're not going to make it seem like a strip club necessarily. So the reason I said that is I think they do actually do a good job of not making it feel weird.
Yeah.
You know, not making it feel like, all right, you couldn't really do this. Like, they sell it.
But I think what's great about this show is they don't shy away from any of those details. So, like, if we're going to shoot a strip club, let's figure out how we can do that and make it look real. We're going to show this priest who is become an alcoholic, and they do not shy away from that at all. They get into, like, the true, like, fall of that and the dark side and how that has really affected his life. The show keeps the right and wrong messy. On all fronts. And I think that is one of the biggest strengths of this show.
Yeah. So they end up tracking her down. She escapes. And then the next bit is they're tracking down some of the girls. I actually got a little confused here. I felt like I missed something at some point. But so they figure out where one of the ambulance drivers is and they chase after it, but they're too late. Is that right?
Yes, but then they find the other victims sort of there.
Also, we should point out that, like, Mayhem escapes because the detective can't shoot herself. She basically can't shoot Mayhem, even though she had her point blank.
Yeah. Listen, she would have an easier time if Mayhem was a carrot person, like over on Chilling Adventures with Sabrina.
Right.
I think that's what they should probably
figure
out.
Well, I was just really kind of disappointed with that moment because, like, okay, what did you think was going to happen? You're watching the back door in case she runs out and you have to do something. And I was just really disappointed that she couldn't shoot her in the leg or nothing.
Well, I think that's the point, right, is that she's split off into this coward version of herself that is beta to Mayhem's alpha.
And she's new to the idea of trying to kill herself, you know, like you would be.
Right. I don't think that's a normal thing.
No hesitation, Pete?
Well, I think, you know, we saw it with the mice, you know, it's kill or be killed.
So you see another Pete walking out of a Subway sandwich shop eating your meatball sub, and you're like, murder that fucker.
Immediately choke him out, yeah.
No questions? You would be like, hey, what's your deal?
We've been over this before.
Yeah. Well, what if he was like, hey, other Pete, I've got your meatball sub, and you get about that far, and you just go,
You would have to start with, I'm from the future, otherwise he's going to die.
Oh, so future Pete is okay, but identical Pete is not okay.
Exactly.
What if it was you from the past and you murdered yourself and then died?
Oh, classic, shit. You know, Back to the Future scenario.
Yeah, you're like an O. Henry story.
That's not the scenario in Back to the Future, Pete. Yeah, no, you stumbled sure on that because that's not. You got very nervous there, but then you trapped yourself in saying it was a classic Marty McFly.
No, because, you know, he looks at the picture, he's watching himself disappear, which is like he's choking himself out. You know what I mean?
That is not like he's choking himself out. It's very different. At all.
I kind of feel like you guys saw a different movie than I did.
Sure. So anyway, they check out the girls that they rescued, and they immediately find out that the girls have no hope anymore, none at all.
Yeah, this scene I thought was so good. Like, Tandy touches them, they have no hope. Ty touches them, and they're basically all fear, which I thought was great.
Now, let me throw something out at you, though. Do you think that metaphorically they're like that because of what's happened to them? Or is there something chemical going on? Is there something with the overall Roxanne chemical storyline going on that they're potentially being dosed with?
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping it's a little bit of that more than the fact that they don't have hope.
Yeah, I definitely think, I mean, we thought Mayhem was going to be the villain for this season, but I think there's going to be a larger villain that, like, because we still don't know who is actually doing all this ambulance stuff and why. And I do think that's going to be the overarching villain for this season, while Mayhem will just be sort of the dark side of being a hero, sort of a hero no one likes, a bad hero, like a Punisher type hero that I think
Punisher's in the streets doing things other heroes don't want to do.
That's
all right,
literally what Mayhem. That's literally what Mayhem. That's what Mayhem is doing.
Up the streets,
that's what Mayhem
man.
Is doing, and I think that's what we're supposed to learn.
I agree with you though, Justin, that it's. I do think it's a bigger thing where the more we peel this back, the more we realize this is Roxanne doing this the whole time.
Pete agreed with me. Punisher's bad. Let's move on. Next topic.
Yeah. So they end up tracking Mayhem down again, and they have a big fight. And it's who ends up trying to shoot her? It's she ends up trying to shoot some of the criminals, and Cloaks Mayhem, sucks her in. Instead of letting Tandy hurt her in any way, and she's gone forever, except she's not.
Yeah.
She's actually wandering around in the dark forest. She finds a gas station, opens up a fridge, and sees her boyfriend in there and says, "Who's up for some awkward reunion pancakes?" And that's the end of the episode.
Right.
Well, you brought this up earlier, Alex. I was hoping that Mayhem would find Detective Connors in that kind of cape world and be able to kind of clean that mess up.
She's still May.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I think he's wandering around in the dark forest somewhere. I was definitely surprised to see the boyfriend there.
Yeah.
But
well, they set it up with the fridge stuff, so.
It's like also, like, ostensibly, this is an extension of Ty's powers where she is seeing her worst fears realized.
Yeah. I mean, that said, taking Mayhem, who's already a little unhinged, and throwing her into a nightmare dimension that potentially she can escape from later, probably a bad idea.
Yeah, you know, a bad idea.
In the comics, the Dark Force works very differently, where criminals are sucked into Cloak and then come out at a later time very cold, sucked of all their fear, completely drained. I don't know if that's what's going to happen here. I guess we'll have to see how it plays out.
I would think that maybe Mayhem is going to burst out of Ty when he doesn't expect it, in the same way that in like the Infinity Gauntlet comic book series, Thanos burst out of Cloak.
Yeah,
at a point.
Cool. Anything else you guys want to talk about with the episode?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about how I liked how they kind of struggled with the whole, like, they found the place where all the women were being held, and they, you know, really kind of, they're still struggling with their powers, and not everything is kind of like, okay, they could just show up and rescue all the women. Like, that was, like, a real struggle, and I'm glad that they're taking the time to kind of show that.
Yeah, I mean, what I like about this show right now is it's really putting a nice split between the two main characters philosophically about what they believe and what they believe is right. So I'm excited to see that thematically play out.
Yeah. Cool. This episode only, Cloak or Dagger? Who won, Cloak or Dagger? Justin, why don't you go first?
Got to give it up for Cloak. He's maintaining his philosophy of just, he had a great line. It was like, that's the kind of mentality that got my brother killed, which I thought was great. Shoot first, ask questions later. He's developing his powers. He's cloaking bullets. He's absorbing people into the Dark Force. Cloak is coming through.
Cloak's no joke. What about you, Pete?
Yeah, I agree with Justin. I'm going to say Mayhem, because Mayhem doesn't have time for paperwork. Mayhem's going to get shit done and take care of the bad guys.
You spent this entire episode saying you would kill an evil twin instantly. Wait, are you the evil twin? Is that what's going on here?
I think that's the revelation we're facing right now.
All right. I'm going to go with Cloak as well. I thought Cloak was great this episode. Dagger was good as well, but I agree with you, Justin, what you were saying. All right. If you would like to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by and we'll suck you into our Dark Force.
Wow.
What else do you want to plug, Pete?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have in our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. And hey, don't forget to have a drink as soon as you wake up. Bye-bye, everybody.